Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
And our old pal, Phil Anderson, Libertarian candidate for governor. He was once the Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate. Actually received my vote, I'll say proudly. He had 4% in that race, right, Phil? Which is pretty good.
Which one? For Senate?
The Senate race.
Three.
Oh, only
Truth
three.
Truth be told, only three. Almost 90,000 votes.
I tried to sugarcoat it with one
more
point.
Well, somebody might look that up, so I have to
understand.
Be very careful about what we say.
But that's not bad, because a lot of times we have 1% for third-party candidates.
Yeah, it doesn't always go very well, but we fought our butts off.
Fought hard?
Yep, we did.
Now you're running for the governor's, you know, you may get more votes now. I mean,
we expect to. That's one of the reasons I ran, is because having a decent amount, at least for a third-party candidate, a decent amount of name recognition and party recognition across the state, we didn't want to lose that momentum.
They talk about the Republicans are kind of split between the more social conservative and the libertarian wings. But doesn't the Democratic Party have a libertarian? I mean, in the sense of not having too much regulation regarding physical body issues and cable smut and all that. I mean, isn't each party have its own libertarian?
Well, they wouldn't identify it as libertarian on the Democrat side. That sort of falls in with the definition of progressive, I guess.
Oh, but progressive.
Basically, when
you want smut on cable if you're a progressive.
But you know the way Governor Johnson described it when he was running for president, I think is accurate. It's a little too vague, really, and sort of unprincipled. But
yeah, yeah.
It's accurate in terms of collecting issues, and that is us being socially accepting and fiscally conservative.
Well,
I think that covers it.
You've heard of Emo Phillips, who's a comedian.
Yeah, I have heard of Emo
Phillips. He said a libertarian is a Republican who likes hookers.
Likes to smoke pot or something.
Yeah, right,
That's way off.
Boy, my late friend Stu Seffern was so offended every time I told that joke. He didn't like that. I said, well, have some fun. Come on.
Yeah, we have to deal with the names that are thrown at us and explain it. That's part of being who we are.
Well, that's the point. Now, there's breaking news. We just saw where it's Ron Johnson, our own senator, one of two, is against the tax bill. He doesn't like this pass-through tax, which is too high on LLCs and so forth. Your thoughts on the tax code and what should be done?
Well, at the federal level, I think that the new tax bill that's being proposed, you know, that people criticize it saying that it's not a tax benefit for the middle class and it's a tax cut for the rich, but that doesn't really acknowledge the fact that of all the taxes that are paid, it's mostly rich people paying them. So any tax cut is by definition going to help the rich. But I think that this argument and this criticism, all this back and forth about it is a product of the identity politics that are foisted on people
day.
You know, they're driven to be envious of the 1% and vilify them and make them into non-humans.
But when you say that, you're talking about the income tax. I mean,
right.
A lot of people don't pay any federal income tax. I mean, their money with all the credits and child credits and the personal exemption, the standard deduction, they don't pay any tax.
Right.
So half the people pay no. So. Sure, but they pay payroll taxes and they pay property taxes. I mean, if you really wanted to do it, you could do a refundable tax credit. You could do a payroll tax cut. I mean, there are ways you could target the middle class, to be fair.
I do agree with the idea that it should be simplified. It's way too complicated, and taxes in and of themselves are a disincentive for people to be productive. And the idea, again, not to try to steer this towards identity politics, but the idea that there are some mean mustache twirling rich people out there. I mean, there are some rich people and some
poor
people.
Well, there are some of those.
But also their money, no matter where it is being put to work in some way, shape, or form, even if they stick it in a bank somewhere in the United States anyway. It's funding mortgages. It's investment.
They don't spend it. It means inflation is lower, right?
Exactly. It's not a zero-sum game. It's not just a pie to be divided up. That's an uneducated way to look at it.
Well, now, the phrase we hear a lot, trickle-down economics, and my question about that is, when you're trying to find a job, do you ask the person who's rummaging around the dumpster for food for a job? I mean, usually you don't ask that person.
Yes, exactly.
So isn't it by definition to some extent true that we have trickle-down? Because you're asking the person who's above you for the job.
But the problem with that phrase is that trickle doesn't sound like very much. If somebody that has money and has resources, has capital, wants to make more, wants to have more, and you have to invest it in either in the market, which helps drive prosperity for middle-class people as well who are invested in that via retirement accounts, or you're building plants, or you're hiring people to help you do things, it's good for everybody. So it's a lot more than a trickle. Trickle sounds, it evokes an idea that there's very little being dripping down from the top. But in fact, allowing people to keep what they earn and spend it and invest it is the best way for our economy to be prosperous and staying out of their way.
I've seen, and I'm sure you love him, Robert Reich. He's He makes the point that wages in real terms, adjusted for inflation, are lower than they were in 1972. Do you buy that?
I don't know.
Well, anybody
can make statistics say anything, really. And I don't know that that's true or not. I haven't looked at that particular number. But you can pull things out of even things that are statistically true but don't paint a full picture of the reality.
Well, but then on the counter-argument on that, which one I would think you'd be sympathetic with is the fact that, remember the back in the day when somebody would get a color TV and you'd go from houses over to see it? I mean, we didn't have a color TV. I was a kid and other people had color TVs before we did.
Same here.
And a refrigerator, somebody would get a new and you'd go see it. It was a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first time that you could get ice or water out of the door, that was a huge deal.
Well, washer and dryer, I mean, those were kind of luxury items.
Well,
so what were once luxury items are now commonplace, is my point.
We have a fantastic standard of living, and it's because of capitalism, and not the sort of the capitalism that gets practiced and gets vilified by people today, where there's a lot of cronyism involved, a lot of tax benefits being steered different ways, a lot of protectionism in our free trade agreements. You just let people make stuff, you know, invest, make stuff, create jobs, try to compete with each other. And, you know, the technology that we use every day in our cell phones is a good example of that. While not completely free market, we have more computing power in our pockets now than was on the space shuttle 15 years ago because the free market is at work and it's considerably cheaper than it ever would have been.
Computers. Remember Kathleen Sebelius when she was the HHS secretary? She had one of those giant phones from 10 years before.
Old Seinfeld phone that's as big as a shoebox.
Giant. I mean, you know, even governments to this day aren't even online. I got a speeding ticket in Indiana like 2 years ago, and there was nothing online. You had to mail in the check or, you know, you couldn't even do it online.
Well, and a more politically oriented topic, why can't we, at least to a certain extent, vote online? If we can bank online and risk millions of thousands, whatever dollars that we have and our identity and all this stuff, why can't we vote online? Because the government's not up to that task.
You mentioned that, and also on this Russia thing, and they're talking about Russia doing Facebook ads. Can't anybody buy a Facebook ad?
Yeah. I mean, I tell you what, I when I'm at home at night watching the cable news, I flip back and forth between MSNBC and Fox, trying to sort of parse the middle of that. They're covering completely different things, of course.
Oh,
it's all about Russia.
Oh, yeah.
It's all about Russia, but which of the two big parties is guilty of colluding with Russia and all this
but
stuff?
My point is, what is illegal about colluding with Russia? Somebody said to me, the
government. Them running ads, I mean, the American government has been much, much worse in manipulating elections around the world than the Russians have ever been.
Somebody said, the government can't do it. And I said, the Trump campaign was not the government, it was a private organization, right? Messed up.
Yeah.
Kids running it over pizza at midnight. I mean, they're not the government.
Right.
They can collude with anybody they want.
One side is talking about uranium deals. The other side is talking about, you know, and they're all talking about the FBI and what Jeff Sessions is saying and what he isn't saying. And it's two completely different stories aimed at two completely different parties trying to be based on the same facts. And that's a symptom of how
you mentioned
messed
that.
Up our government is.
Jim Jordan. Let's go to the Jim Jordan a little bit. He was the congressman from Ohio who didn't have a sport coat on his little shirt. He was like going to go after Sessions.
I watched that.
You saw it.
It was compelling.
Let's play a little bit of that right now.
The FBI paid Christopher Steele, the author of the dossier.
Those are matters you'll have to direct to the, I think, maybe the special counsel.
And why is that? I'm just asking if someone.
Well, I'm not able to reveal internal investigatory matters here that's under the investigation of anybody, but particularly, I think
this happened in the summer of 2016. We know the Clinton campaign, the Democrat National Committee, paid through a law firm, Fusion GPS, to produce the dossier. We know the author was Christopher Steele. It's been reported that he was on the payroll of the FBI. I'm just wanting to know if, in fact, that is the case.
I'm not able to provide an answer to you.
Did the FBI present the dossier to the FISA court?
I'm not able to answer that.
So he can't answer any of that. Mueller wouldn't talk, so you're wasting your... But the Republicans, in my mind, should focus more on the Fusion GPS and the giving away the identities through the surveillance, than focus on Uranium One, which to me is a nothing burger, because you can't prove anything there. I mean, why they focus on Uranium One takes away from the question of surveillance.
Exactly. There's so many things going on here, and I happened to watch Sean Hannity's open last night, and he had this four different graphs of how all this stuff was tied together. And while I don't know how much of that is true and how much of that is rhetoric, I don't really know. It's too complicated to follow.
Well, it's hard to get any kind of smoking gun when you have nine agencies weighing in on the deal on Uranium One. I mean, just the State Department was one of nine.
Exactly.
I mean, it's
and who signed off on it, and why, and even what the actual truth is about our uranium supply. Yeah. On Fox, they're talking about, you know, we don't have enough uranium in the United States, so 20%, or if that's true, is a big deal. While on MSNBC, they're saying we have plenty of uranium, and so yeah. Part of the reporting, the supposed journalistic work being done, they're not citing real numbers about the uranium supply. They're just telling us things that we have to rely on them for when they're in exact opposition to what the other channel's saying. Where's the truth? Where's the media? Just saying, here's the truth. There isn't one.
The FISA court last November scolded the Obama administration for surveilling Americans. And that was done last November in a hand-wringing or hand-slap. And that, to me, is more meat for the GOP than to talk about this. Uranium One, you better have your ducks in a row, or you're going to look like idiots.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't get Hillary on Benghazi. They're not going to get her on Uranium One.
Yeah.
Now, the allegation is there was a corrupt informant who says the FBI was involved and there was laundering of money and all this. But you know what? Good luck with that conviction, right?
Exactly. I mean, there's so much interconnectedness. One of the guys that was on Fox last night talked about network analysis. Look at who's worked where, who's talking to each other. In some cases, and I think the Justice Department is an example of this, we have Jeff Sessions in charge of the Justice Department with a bunch of holdovers from the Obama administration.
But I can't talk about that, Phil. I'm not at liberty to talk about that.
Clearly, he's relying on, and I don't know, maybe you know better than I, did Ronald Reagan invent the I may or may not remember, or the I don't remember, or was that Bill Clinton, or was it farther back than
that? Reagan did a lot of those, but during Watergate, it was always to the best of my recollection, or I have no recollection.
So we're back to Nixon.
That was John Mitchell. That was the Watergate crowd.
So that's an adequate defense. Between saying that he doesn't remember and now he remembers, or something like that, plus his
trying
to shield sensitive information.
I remember now because of the media report. I saw the media report, and that's when I did remember that.
Now, I'm a little bit sympathetic to a bad memory, but when you are a public official and the records of your meetings are easily obtainable, and you can find out where you were and who was in the room, and when the media can
when they ask you on the fly, though, do you remember this meeting? And you don't, and then I could see where, first of all, this guy, this Papadopoulos guy, was 29 years old. I mean, he's a flunky, essentially. And, in a chaotic campaign, I'm sure a lot of those guys don't remember him because he was kind of the coffee boy. I mean, let's face it, he was sending emails, but so what?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, what we've arrived at is a situation where there's still so much hearsay, still so much spin, and still a ton of facts.
Well,
I mean, the issue to me is the way I watch news is that you're hearing one set of media report desperately on one side, set report on the other, when it's probable that it's all true,
Yeah, maybe, but you can talk to WikiLeaks by responding to a WikiLeaks email. That's not illegal. It simply is not illegal.
Exactly.
Now, if you're coordinating the hack, that would be illegal.
Right.
But we don't have any proof of coordinating the hack yet, do we?
No.
All right, we'll come back with more. Actually, Ellen Dershowitz, who's a Democrat and Hillary donor, weighs in on whether Hillary should be investigated, as he also condemns the special counsel. They have 90,000 employees in the Department of Justice. And they always have to get a special counsel. Come back with more with Phil Anderson and the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
Two Bridges was one of the toughest neighborhoods in New York, especially in the Al Smith projects. It was in no man's land with no rules. On Christmas Eve 1951, Mac Pastamadeo vanished without a trace while walking home with his little boy Angelo. Now 13, Angelo is a gang member and the only witness to the brutal murder of an undercover cop who holds a clue to Mac's disappearance 6 years ago. Stalked by killers, Angelo becomes part of an unlikely alliance of a priest, a mob boss, and a police detective in order to uncover the truth behind the murder and Mac's disappearance. Weepers by Nick Chiarkis.
Good research will make you wiser and more successful. If you operate a business, create a product, or provide a service, what don't you know that your customers know? There are multiple answers to that question that will help you realize greater success. Troy Research is a consumer opinion market research company that finds answers to important questions. Where can good research take your business? Call or email to talk about it. Troy Research, 271-8884, or email jlittle@troyresearch.com. The all-new Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Rayl.
Most realtors just came in and talked with you and then put an ad in the paper. Tim came in and said, here's what we're going to do. You had a plan, and it was spectacular. It really worked well, and I couldn't have been happier.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Rayl of Coldwell Banker's Success, 698-7653.
I would recommend Tim Rayl to anyone who had a house for sale in the Dane County area.
Tim Rayl, 698-7653.
Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Or email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
Phil Anderson, our guest, and we come down to the question with the Roy Moore controversy. You know, it's not a question of a court of law because he's innocent until proven guilty, but we don't have time for that. There's going to be no trial. The statute of limitations has passed. So my question is it reasonable to believe a woman who has nothing to gain but everything to lose and whose claims and can be backed up that she had corroborating witnesses in the sense of hearing her story at the time, you know, story commensurate with the alleged offense, and you have corroborating witnesses. Yeah, she did tell me that, Megan. I mean, it's going a long way to say that it's all made up.
Yeah, and I think we have to make sure that we're ignoring – or not ignoring, but setting aside the possibility of any legal action at this point and acknowledging that this is being tried in the court of public opinion.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And then any response that he's innocent until proven guilty is not relevant at this point. So if – and I have people that are close to me who have experience in dealing with these sorts of cases, talking to victims, and their opinion is that the accounts that they're hearing are believable. So, you know, it all is going to revolve around two things, I think. Number one, do we believe he's guilty? How do the stories compare? And number two, what are the standards, the community standards in Alabama? Because he'll be their senator if elected.
Roy liked to date the high school girls. That's what his
Well, he acknowledged that, right? Yeah. He said he dated – I mean, he didn't deny that he dated teenagers.
Not as a general rule, and I always ask permission from their mothers. Any girl I would date, I would get permission from their mother. He was 32 at the time.
That's an admission of guilt to dating girls who are young, not necessarily underage.
Illegality in that case, but guilt
of – But that's distasteful. But, again, it comes back to people in Alabama feeling like that their standards or their way of life is being questioned by the Yankees and by the rest of the country or whatever. So there's a lot mixed up here. I mean, I think based on what I've listened to and read, I think that there's a case, and that I would be, if I were a Republican in Alabama, I probably wouldn't vote for him. But then again, I can see the temptation to vote for him because at least you don't have a Democrat or a Libertarian or somebody. I mean, there's a Libertarian on the ballot, I believe. What do you do? It's a tricky situation. If you're mindful of the fact that he's going to serve in the United States Senate, how relevant is this behavior? How relevant is it relative to the rest of the politicians in office? I don't know.
It's the session seat that expires in like 2 years.
Right.
So you'd have a Southern Democrat there for like 2 years is what they're facing, or have an alleged pedophile in the seat.
And Mitch McConnell's doing his best triangulation to figure out if the seat's going to matter,
well,
right?
If you've got a pedophile in the seat, I mean, what does that do to the race in 2018? I mean, I'm sorry.
No, I agree it's a mess. But I think from Mitch McConnell's standpoint, he's looking at how at risk is his majority in the Senate. Because if it were more at risk, or if that's what he's calculating, then I think he's not coming out as strongly against Roy Moore as he has been.
Yeah, Roy's toast with Mitch, and even Senator Gardner, who's chairman of the Senate Finance Senatorial Committee, wants him expelled if she wins.
Right. There's people that don't want to seat him. It's a tremendous.
I didn't know the girl. I didn't know the girl. See, and if I dated a teenager, I got permission from their mother. How old were you at the time? 32.
Maybe some of these mothers will come forward and say, yep, Judge Moore came and he asked me if he could date my daughter. How old was your daughter at the time, ma'am? 18 and 1 month. How did you feel about a 32-year-old assistant district attorney dating your – well, he seemed to be able to, you know, raise a – I mean, who knows how that's going to sound? No. You know, we don't know. You know,
the mole cop – well, we had him on a watch list. You know, I like that one. And the assistant DA, well, we all knew Roy liked to date high school girls. Now, but, you know, again, we can put it to bed, but what we've reached in this country is that we believe the accusers against – the other side, but when the accusers accuse our side, we don't believe them.
Well, yeah, and
it's
even
a witch hunt.
And even in Hollywood, if you take it taken all together, the media, politics, and Hollywood, it's actually, I think it's a really good thing that for however this started, and I can't really pinpoint a beginning to it, but where people are now coming forward and naming names and naming dates and times that things happened.
Well, the Harvey Weinstein
story. Even George Takei. Did you hear that story? Apparently he was involved in, well, the victim says it was an assault, but it was a drunken liaison sort of thing where they misinterpreted each other's actions. I don't know. But
now, dialogue. Go ahead.
People are coming out and saying, me too. Not only the initially when the assaults first started becoming public and people that were men who were guilty of those sorts of things saying, you know, I've done this as well and I'm sorry and I'm repenting of it. That, I mean, there was a lot of that on social media, but now it's also people coming out and say, you know, naming names, and this has happened to me as well, and I think it's refreshing.
How about the members of Congress who allegedly exposed himself to a woman member, and the accuser was a California congresswoman who didn't name names, but she said, yeah, one of them, you know, exposed himself.
Let me tell you this fact.
Give me a break.
That I learned last night. $15.7 million have been spent of our taxpayers' money at the federal government to pay out settlements for members of Congress and their staffs.
Over the years?
I think since 1997, I want to say.
Really?
To settlements to people who were mistreated in the workplace sexually, some sort of sexual misconduct. $15.7 million. And we haven't heard
and
about
the victim, that. The victim has no counsel, and you can't talk about it publicly.
Well, there's a specific process. They have to wait more than 180 days. They have
antiquated process.
And they have to be quiet about it in order for this to all happen. So
it doesn't say much for men, does it, Phil? I mean, I know you and I are these shining examples of gentlemanly behavior.
That, I think, is one of the big questions, is that how – and I don't want to poo-poo any of this. This is all extremely important. Yeah. But relevant to being to serving in public office, that's a different thing.
No,
so
I
what
know.
Standards – we have a governor right now who – and I'm not – you know, who puts himself forward as somebody who's very virtuous.
Yeah.
He's a preacher's son, et cetera.
They always drank the most when I was in college.
That's part of his image.
Preacher – we call him PK, preacher's kid.
So same in the Orthodox Church, PK, same thing. But he puts himself forward that way. So therefore, I think it's fair to question if something were to come up with Scott Walker. As I'm running, I'm not putting myself forward as some sort of beacon of virtue and example for people to follow, young men or whatever. I've had stuff in my life that I'm not proud of, and if it comes out, I'll own it. But That's not what I'm trying to do. I want to be elected so that I can represent these ideas that are good for everybody, good for people, good for how they interact with each other, good for how we won't have a coercive government. Those are the things that are important, not what I might have done or what any other person might have done to get to that point, I don't think, unless they're putting themselves forward in that way, which some do. And Judge Moore does. So he's you know, he's a Bible thumper.
I believe in the Ten Commandments.
Well, then you got to own that. Then once you bring that up as part of your public personality, then it's fair game to be criticized.
I do date teenage girls, though, when I get permission from their mother.
Well, and then the gall of, I don't remember who it was, to mention Joseph and Mary. I just about dropped my teeth.
Biblical reference to borrow, was made there.
To borrow a reference from my grandmother, I just about dropped my teeth with that. I mean, that's a whole other thing to dig into, but it's just a mess. They should just shut up about religion. They should just shut right up about it because, number one, it's not relevant. Number two, it shouldn't be part of public life in that way. And number three, they don't know what the heck they're talking about.
No, when you get into biblical arguments, you really can't win on that.
No. And it just, again, it supports the idea that he's holding himself up to this standard. Anybody who's running as a Christian in the bio of their campaign can be held to that. And it's, you know, we know as Christians that we're sinners, so it's not really a winning political strategy to identify yourself as somebody who holds those things, especially if they're not relevant to what you want to do in office.
I've been dealing with gluttony for a long time.
Same here.
Coach Gard today told me to walk 20 minutes a day. And have the salad at Culver's.
He told you that?
Yeah, walk 20 minutes a day and have the salad at Culver's.
Oh, my.
Now, if you want to stick around, we got Colleen Kerr, who was, this is fascinating. Apparently,
I watched that last night.
Pittsburgh mayor allegedly had the cops go after him or take him out or something. Kaleem Kerr is coming on to explain what happened under the heavy hand of government.
Oh, my goodness.
The Mid-Shank Show. You stick around. We'll talk about your agenda later. The Mid-Shank Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
Joe here from Comedy on State. Looking for something to do for your girl's bachelorette party? Trust me, we can take care of that for you. Come to Comedy on State. It's so easy. You can go to madisoncomedy.com. You can purchase your tickets right from the website. You don't even have to talk to anybody over the phone if you're a weird person. Let's be honest, you're probably a weirdo. You're listening to Mitch.
For a list of upcoming Comedy Club performers or to purchase tickets, go to madisoncomedyclub.com and click shows. Performer bios are available by clicking on their pictures.
That's Comedy on State. madisoncomedy.com or 256-0099.
This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
At P3 Pro, we're invested in creating a dynamic video experience for our clients. Everything from planning, shooting, and editing your events, commercials, webcasts, or films. P3 Pro has 27 years of industry standard experience working to make your vision a reality. We stand apart from your traditional run-of-the-mill production experience and create memorable, moving, breathtaking imagery that conveys your message in a powerful way. We take your vision and turn it into a work of art. The art of storytelling, the art of beautifully crafted imagery, the art of persuasion. Visit us on the web at p3pro.xyz or call 608-571-3776. That's 608-571-3776.
6AM Marketing is a Wisconsin-based ad agency that doesn't look or act like other ad agencies. They don't follow conventional thinking and constantly push themselves and their clients to test the bounds of how far they can go. The result is relationships that have lasted more than 10 years. Clients refer to 6AM and their work as fresh, insightful, strategic, edgy, and creative. 6AM shows customers why your products and services are better than the competition. 6AM's brand smart process helps you establish your brand in the market for years to come. With a client's marketing team by its side, 6AM digs for the business problem the client is trying to solve and the business goals and objectives they hope to achieve. Examining the market, competitors, the brand's consumers, and messaging to define a brand proposition that is both compelling and unique to the market. 6AM Marketing. They do it differently, and they do it well. Go to 6ammarketing.com. That's www.6ammarketing.com.
Well, Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
We are standing by for Kaleem Kerr's call. In the meantime, Phil Anderson's still here, and we'll get into his agenda for governor. Also, a caller on the line right now who's been waiting and called back. Dave, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Mitch.
How's it going?
It's going well. I love the conversation. You two are good together.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, we're going to pick up the furniture pretty soon.
I've been trying to get Mitch to bring me out as a co-host, we haven't worked out the financials yet.
Yeah, exactly.
I take a kind of perverse pleasure in what's going on. It is unbelievable what is being uncovered right now. It is the tsunami of 2004, but brought to America, and all these players are going down. Isn't that? It's mildly entertaining to me, but it's super sad that it's happening to the women. I'm glad they're getting their day, and they're talking about it. It's a good conversation. I love that. My fear, though, is that ultimately it's going to make the good guys go, no, I don't think I want to go out to dinner with you. You never know what can be misinterpreted.
One tweet, one tweet or one Facebook post, and you're ruined. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
You're done.
Well, do you remember when Mike Pence was being made fun of for never having gone out with a woman without his wife present?
Right.
It seems like he might be wise at this point to have never
done
that.
Well, that's right. Not succumbing to temptation. Well, my daughter grilled me from the airport about, you know, my golfing buddies, if they make sexist, misogynist jokes or comments, I should call them out. I said, you've got 90% of the golfers that would be affected by this. You know.
That's where they go to do that.
Only 10% of...
That's their safe space, right?
Golfers are gentlemanly in that regard. Well, my mother would have cut my tongue out, but I mean, not everybody grows up in a liberal home.
Right, well, that's...
My fear is that we're going to emasculate the men, guys. My simple fear is that this is going to take its logical course and it's going to stifle and freeze out guys being guys. And I'm not covering for a guy like Weinstein or the rest. But if I can't even make a pass at a woman out of being misinterpreted, we're going down the wrong road.
Well, I mean, what are you talking about?
Like,
what do you
Roy
mean?
Moore and
define pass, though.
Yeah, define pass, Dave. Define pass.
That's the problem. As a pass to one person might – I mean, even just – I don't know if you're familiar with the George Takei complaint that came up, where his side of it is he met this young man 25 years ago or whatever. They had a few drinks, went back to George's house. George made a pass. The guy said no thanks and then went home. And the other guy's side of the story is – I don't remember what happened. I woke up with my pants down and George Takei in him. That, of course...
Quite a different memory there of what actually
exactly,
transpired.
Exactly. But even though that happened in a same-sex situation, that sort of thing, without respect to my personal experience at all, that's the sort of thing that happens. And, you know, the alcohol is involved, so it's you can't really consent. But, you know, we take women out to dinner and have a couple glasses of wine. I mean, so there's customs, there's tradition, there's miscommunication, and then there's the shame after the fact that might come up where I consented to do something at the time and now I don't feel good about it, and the man or the woman. So it's extremely
looking
complicated.
Looking back, I would say to somebody, you look familiar. Do we know each other? Have we met before? I would use lines like that to break the ice, which is kind of corny, obviously, pathetic, but to the extent that, you know, I did, I would use those lines. But was that a pass? I mean, that's a pass, I guess. But are they going to say, screw you, I'm going to destroy your life on Twitter for that, or what?
There's going to be a EULA when you want to go out on a date with a woman. There's going to be an end-user license agreement before you can even go out with a woman.
And even then, does that hold once somebody has a couple drinks? You know, does that legally still hold?
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, 120 pounds ago, I mean, I was pursued as much as I pursued others. I mean, there was kind of a two-way street. I mean, what are you going to do? It's sort of like, who was it, Sean Connery was interviewed by Barbara Walters, and he said, do you take advantage of women? And he goes, no, they took advantage of me.
Exactly.
Sorry.
It's a very complicated thing, and to have the law involved is unfortunate, but when people go as far as some of these people have gone, it has to be at a certain point.
You know when you're being a jerk and an asshole and an abuser. I mean, be a gentleman. I mean, but you're saying the lines are gray, Dave, and it's going to become more gray. Is that your concern?
I think it's great that these evil bastards like Weinstein and, to a lesser extent, Roy Moore, that was just, he did ask permission, right?
Roy Moore? Yeah, but he's accused of being a pedophile.
Well, with the 14-year-old, he didn't claim that he asked her mom or anything.
Consent is not a defense when they're 14, Dave.
Even parental consent.
Isn't it true, I think it's true, and I'm in Tampa right now, and we have a serial killer on the loose, four of them in the last 4 months.
The killer? My kids live in St. Petersburg. I'm a little worried about this.
Are you packing heat,
Dave?
Yeah,
it's a... What?
Do you have some defense? Are you carrying a weapon to defend yourself?
I don't concealed carry. I'm not unfamiliar with weapons.
Just curious. Just moving. We're moving right along. Sorry, didn't mean to derail that conversation.
It's good to take the evil bastards out, but I think it's. I think that the mistake is that now every guy becomes suspect, and that all guys do this, and that's the broad brush that my fear is. And that
yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, you lose something quintessentially human.
And I think you take out 80% of the abuse.
Right. I would do singles material in my act in the nightclub, and women loved it. The female servers stopped to listen to it. It was written primarily by a female coworker, and yet my sister thought it was a misogynist bit. I said, no, it's a singles bit. But again, I understand the strong feelings here. So
it's all in the ear of the beholder.
It's so generational, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think you're right, Dave. We don't want to lose that interaction that can bring a lot of joy and satisfaction and lead to serious relationships that arise from when we meet people. I mean, that part of it is how do we dispense with that, without dispensing with all of this?
Yeah,
well, nobody's born knowing how to flirt and do this properly. There is an expert way, and then there's a clumsy way. And guys like Weinstein are at one end of the spectrum, a million light years away is Mr. Rogers.
Could anybody be as grotesque as Harvey Weinstein, which is spelled Weinstein, but some people spell their names, they pronounce them incorrectly, which he does. Anyway, but Dave, we appreciate it. This is Dave Anthony, Dave Gadow. He used to be on WIBA Radio and is in Florida. Thanks for calling into the show.
Thanks, Dave.
Hey, thanks for the time. Great talk, guys.
All right, take care. No, let's be clear. I grew up in a liberal home with strong mothers, and I believe firmly in respect and females should be believed. They should be believed, I think. Otherwise, why would they come forward? They've got everything to lose. I mean, there are all kinds of factors. And you see corroborating witnesses who were told the stories at the time. All those factors have to be involved. And you take the antithesis. Joy Behar on The View calling Bill Clinton's accusers tramps. How is that not a double standard, right?
It's completely a double standard. But to your point, I agree that because the least amount of harm is done by believing the accusers initially until the facts can come out or some investigation, either through the media in the case of Roy Moore or in the courts in the case of others, I think is reasonable. In the same way that I think it's reasonable if police are called to a domestic dispute that they remove somebody from it. I don't really like police involvement to that extent in people's lives, obviously, as a libertarian. However, the initial move doesn't really do anybody any harm, and it can prevent further harm. So as long as everyone's consenting, that's what you do. You take there's a short-term approach and a long-term approach. Unfortunately, the Roy Moore situation, because there's only, 60 however many days till that election, it has to be a short.
Not even that. It's a month.
A month, whatever it is.
Not even that.
It's a short-term. Yeah. It's a short-term thing. So the facts won't all come out and be able to be adjudicated either in the media and not in the courts. But
right.
But so initially, I think it's fair, at least in terms of our judgment of him as a candidate, as a person, as a senator, to assume that it's at least possible.
Right.
That there's because most people don't have these accusations.
The cowboy hat and the pistol they don't seem to work as well now. I mean, it's beyond the Mike Dukakis with the helmet, tying to a thousand.
He's sort of a caricature of himself, and it's not flattering.
I know. But you are running for governor, and questions for Phil Anderson, give us a call. We're efforting Kaleem Kerr. There's a little bit of a glitch in the timing. Maybe he was called away by his kids who want to do homework. Well, who knows? These things happen.
He's a busy man.
Yes. But you are a guy, libertarians believe that private citizens can do everything, I guess. I mean, the government should do what? Anything? Protect us from foreign attack?
Well, protect our rights as a stated in the Constitution. We have rights that belong to us as human beings.
Life, liberty, and property.
Well, yes, and the rest of the Bill of Rights that are an extension about that. You know, being free from search and seizure and not incriminating yourself and the right to defend yourself and express yourself and love who you want and all those things. Confront your accuser. All of those things are, the Bill of Rights is an extension of what we believe as libertarians.
Which amendment deals with loving who you want?
I don't know. Expression, I suppose.
Huh?
I'm going to say it's the first.
Come back. Can't you hate too? The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com and Facebook Live.
This is Pete Gunderson. Pre-planning a life celebration doesn't necessarily mean prepaying. At Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, we offer a variety of affordable options that you can pre-arrange for free. It's pre-planning without the worry of prepaying. Learn more at GundersonFH.com, your hometown life celebration center. Gunderson Funeral Home.
If you operate a business, you know there is no one-size-fits-all solution for today's technology challenges. MadisonGeeks.com plans, services, and installs technologies for small and medium businesses like network systems, servers, firewalls, wireless access points, telecommunications, security, remote service options, and business productivity solutions. MadisonGeeks.com is your IT staff. They take time to sit down to discuss your needs and present cost-effective solutions. With a Better Business Bureau A-plus rating, they are your trusted IT outsource partner. Expect less downtime. Faster resolutions lead to more productivity. Fewer day-to-day issues. Their proactive maintenance helps prevent issues from occurring. MadisonGeeks.com also offers computer and laptop service and repair. Madison Geeks are there to help. They're known for their candid, friendly approach and reliable, ready response. Check them out online at MadisonGeeks.com.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, we'll cost you less. Let Bob Abella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bob Abella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. Mitch Hank for Atterbury, Cameron, Hague.
I'm proud to be sitting next to senior partner and a man who's been voted Wisconsin's super lawyer multiple times, Eric Hague. How do you differ from those firms that do commercials where they brag about winning a $1 million settlement?
We've all seen the commercials on TV where attorneys are bragging about multi-$1 million settlements. That can be somewhat misleading. Achieving a $1 million settlement doesn't necessarily mean that there was great legal work done. You could have a $2 million case, and you could have a lawyer who settles it prematurely for $1 million. Well, they got a $1 million result, but that doesn't necessarily mean high-quality legal work was done. We get the vast majority of our cases through referrals from former clients and predominantly from other lawyers in the community who send us their clients to ask if we can help them with their personal injury cases.
So when you need a lawyer, do what I did. Call Atterbury, Cameron, Hague and reach them at yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com. That's yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to The Mitch Hanks Show.
Welcome back to The Mitch Hanks Show on Madison Talk, MadisonTalks.com. and Facebook. You can hear some great podcasts by Phil Anderson, by the way, on Madison Talks. You have your own podcast now.
We do. Free People well. Show at freepeopleshow.com.
Freepeopleshow.com. Free People Show. But you also hear him on MadisonTalks.com. Right, some archived podcasts.
Back in the old days.
Yes, indeed. Well, not so old.
Just a few months ago.
So, again, your belief is that government is there to protect our rights, life, liberty, property.
Yes.
All these things. Now, Barack Obama, when he was on Chicago Public Radio in 2001, said the Constitution was silent in not providing equality of property and wealth. He thought the government should have been more proactive in sort of distributing decent wages or
well, of course it's
way
silent.
way of life.
That's not what they wanted to happen. I mean, not only is it not reasonable and not for the government to be involved in that level. I mean, to point that out is ridiculous because it was, of course, never the intent of the founders to do any sort of. I mean, we had to amend the Constitution to have the income tax. I mean, there was very limited power to take any money at all for any reason on the federal government's behalf. So to point that out is just ridiculously obvious. But you're right. I mean, the government's job is we have rights that are recognized. We have a Declaration of Independence, and there's lots of other documents and belief systems that support the idea that rights belong to human beings and that we delegate those rights to be governed. That's not the situation that we're in now and haven't been for a long, long time. But that is, to my mind and to liberty-loving people's minds, is the only role of government. Now, that means different things in different situations. And even the Constitution itself was imperfect in the sense that it enshrined eminent domain, which is something that does infringe upon people's right to own stuff and what they can do with it. As a matter of fact, there's things going on in Wisconsin right now with you know, people's land being taken for pipelines and you know, other issues such as the rights of mining companies to come in and pollute if they have the proper documentation from the state.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there's all kinds of infringements on that from the supposedly conservative, liberty-loving governor that we have. So that's why one of the reasons I'm running is that, you know, there are some people who have an original understanding of what rights are and why they're important and why they're real and why they shouldn't be infringed on. And there's people who believe that yet support this governor and his administration, but they shouldn't because it's a big falsehood.
Okay, the counterargument against the libertarian view on that is that if we didn't have government, we wouldn't have people eating because, you know, we had 15 million more people on food share under Obama, and that if we took that away, they would all be in the streets breaking your windows and stealing your cereal.
Well, that's why, as part of our campaign, we're not going to immediately, you know, ditch all those programs right away. I don't think it's responsible, and I don't think it's humane to run for office as a libertarian and then try to fully enact what we stand for, because it would have a chaotic, destructive effect on people's lives.
And if you're working I sent you a video or an audio of Obama 2001 talking about government doing equality in property rights and so forth and wealth, but we'll see if we can find that. Yeah, but if you work at Walmart in the cashier line or you are boxing stuff up and you make $10 an hour, you have a couple of kids, you really don't have enough money to survive, you know, if you want to provide health insurance or, you know, food and rent and the rest. So you could then have more roommates, I suppose. Is that the libertarian view on that? Or?
We think there's a lot wrong with the economy and the way that favorites are played with companies like Walmart and others that create those situations. And if government gets out of the way, to a certain extent, it stops playing favorites in terms of land acquisition for Walmart. As a matter of fact, in Monona, the acquisition of that land was done with a little crony capitalism with the mayor.
But I'm talking about paying the cashier $10 versus 25.
But the cost of building Walmart's and its success is predicated on political involvement, and we don't want that same political involvement from playing favorites between corporations. So it changes the whole landscape of what we're talking about.
Let's give it a shot here on Obama in 2001 when he was a senator from Illinois, state senator. See if we have the right clip.
Good morning and welcome to Odyssey on WBEZ Chicago 91.5 FM. And we're joined by Barack Obama, who is Illinois State Senator from the 13th District and a senior lecturer in the law school at the University of Chicago.
You know, if you look at the victories and failures of the civil rights movement and its litigation strategy in the court, I think where it succeeded was to vest formal rights in previously dispossessed peoples, so that I would now have the right to vote. I would now be able to sit at a lunch counter and order, and as long as I could pay for it, I'd be okay. But the Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth and sort of more basic issues of political and economic justice in the society. And to that extent, as radical as I think people tried to characterize the Warren Court, it wasn't that radical. It didn't break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the founding fathers in the Constitution, at least as it's been interpreted, and Warren Court interpreted it in the same way, that generally the Constitution is a charter of negative liberties, says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf. And that hasn't shifted. And one of the, I think, the tragedies of the civil rights movement was because the civil rights movement became so court-focused, I think that there was a tendency to lose track of the political and community organizing and activities on the ground that are able to put together the actual coalitions of power through which you bring about redistributive change.
Yeah, that's use power of organization to, you know, as he was a lawyer for the group that Acorn for a mm-hmm. while, you know, they sat and blocked the path to get into the bank and so forth because there weren't enough banks on the South Side. He said for economic justice, what they could do on your behalf.
Well, here's the thing. The two things I got out of that long, relatively convoluted sentences that he said on the radio then is the idea that the courts are responsible for being sort of the sole keeper of what's constitutional and what isn't. And that is a relatively new-ish phenomenon. Originally, especially before, you know, in the original formulation of the government, everyone was responsible for being constitutional. But the other part, and the most, the thing that saturates that mindset is this idea that justice, economic justice, is redistributive, that's what should happen in order for economic justice. And that is not justice. He talks about here's the problem.
Change.
He talks about rights.
Yeah.
For people of color that and they weren't, and it's true, of course, that they were discriminated against, and the court and the civil rights movement helped to, obviously it hasn't been 100% successful, but helped remedy that. That's fine. Even though they were still covered by the 14th Amendment, that wasn't working for them. They had equal protection under the Constitution, but it wasn't working. It wasn't happening.
No, because you could arrest somebody for jaywalking and make them a criminal, right, and you got to control them again. Yeah.
So that was necessary based on the time. But to talk about rights and then to turn around and talk about justice in a completely different way doesn't make any coherent sense. Where is the justice for people whose rights are being violated by taking what's theirs and giving it to other people? That's
was Henry Wallace right there. You know, you are a guy who believes in freedom of religion, freedom of you know, property and so forth, whereas Henry Wallace is freedom from want, freedom from hunger, freedom from cold. In other words, they wanted the government to make sure you weren't cold and weren't hungry.
And that is completely inconsistent with any idea that individuals have rights that government can't violate or that other people can't violate. Because you have to violate their rights in order to accomplish those blanket comforts. That's number one. And number two is even, you know, in socialist countries, the Soviet Union, other places, it also doesn't accomplish that. It doesn't mathematically work. It doesn't work via human nature. People don't end up being free from want. Even a country, again, like the Soviet Union or countries in South America that have vast natural resources, once there's a socialist government in place that's supposed to be accomplishing the justice that President Obama was talking about, it doesn't do that because government by nature is corrupt. And you can call it socialist or redistributive or whatever you want. It ends up being a dictatorship under the facade of being fair. And that's even more dangerous. And that's the sort of government that had killed tens of millions of people in the 20th century. It never worked. History's against it. Basic economics is against it. Human rights is against it.
And for those who point out crony capitalism, you're opposed to that. And you're opposed to monopolies. And you're opposed to antitrust. You're opposed to all that stuff, right?
Exactly. A free marketplace is one where people can get in and get out, can make choices, have choices, can, you know, sell raw milk, can sell their baked goods.
Uber is okay.
Yeah, even this thing that happened in Kenosha where a woman, this is just a couple of days ago, a woman was making food in her own kitchen for homeless people because the kitchen that they were using wasn't, I don't remember why, but it wasn't available anymore. And the government came around and told her to stop.
Yeah.
And she was making it for free. So that's the government protecting us and making sure. That's just not how it works. It never works that way.
Well, I had a friend, a coworker once who was driving Lyft as opposed to Uber on the side back when the government of Madison was cracking down and fining them like $150.
Mm-hmm.
And he was at the airport and the cop said, "You're driving Lyft, aren't you?" He goes, "I'm here to pick up a friend." And the cop said, "You're lying to me. You're here as a Lyft driver." And the guy said, "I'm friends with everybody." I mean, but
nice try.
Even now, the cops, if you're driving Uber, you drop somebody off of the curb, you know, but you can't pick somebody up the curb. You have to be in the outer island, and you have to have a sticker on your windshield.
Yeah.
So, because Paul Sockland, so even if you drop somebody off and you get a call and somebody wants to standing right there to be picked up, you have to drive all the way around and come back and go in the outer island.
Yeah, the whole situation is completely indicative of what's wrong, not only with Paul Soglin's city government, but with Scott Walker's state government. Because Paul Soglin wanted to shoehorn them into the taxi industry so he could control it to the benefit of the taxi companies. And I was intimately involved with that. Uber should have been allowed to enter the market. And then if he wanted to deregulate the taxi companies to compete, that was his option. He chose not to do that. But then Google spent a lot of money through AFP with state legislators in Wisconsin and got a bill presented that not only made Uber legal by creating a completely new category, a transportation network company at Uber's request, but also made it illegal for local units of government to make laws regarding Uber. It exempted them from any local. Yeah. So is that – that's two different ways.
They can still regulate it, though, because they make you go a certain place.
Well, that's only at the airport. That's not a city. Has to do with federal money at the
really?
Airport.
Really?
Yes. Okay. That's not the city or the county. The city can make no law. They can't be there preempted by this legislation. So that's two cases of bad government right there by a progressive and a conservative where they're both overreaching.
Yeah, well, he raids the accounts of the golf fund and the CDA, Community Development Authority, and the Monona Terrace and parking and one other entity. He takes money from those entities for the general fund. And to me, that's theft, at least in terms of golf, because golf is not subsidized or a monopoly. Yeah. The others I mentioned all are. Parking would be the other place. He takes money from those entities.
He doesn't care. He thinks this is his town. He thinks State Street is his street.
Well, he wants to close golf courses, and I'm saying, look, they're self-supporting. It's just that they need capital improvements. They should be given the right to have a capital budget. They could fund that with their own operating revenue, which is not taxpayers. It's all self-sustaining revenue.
Yeah.
But he hates golfers.
Well, one of the big initiatives that we have running for governor is to repeal the personal income tax in the state of Wisconsin for the very reason that that's a blank check for legislators to spend money, as opposed to having discrete taxes that go for specific things like the gas tax, which is not great, but at least you know it's supposedly going towards roads. Income tax is not that way. We want to get rid of that.
There you have it, Phil Anderson running for governor as a libertarian. A libertarian who doesn't like hookers. I'll say that for a fact.
I don't dislike hookers.
I was just making a joke.
I want the hooker vote too. So
I understand that. Okay, well maybe from Russia. Putin said they're the best in the world. We thank Mike Brockenfeld being our engineer. We thank Bob Keller of the Keller Real Estate Group for the Spacer in West Washington. Check out their properties, Tuscan Place, Washington Court, Senior Housing on the West Side, Whitcomb Square. Go to kellerapartments.com. That's kellerapartments.com. Bob Abella, The Wide World of Radio is next with classic radio shows from the 30s and 40s coming your way. Thanks for listening. This is the Mitch Hank on The Mitch Hank Show on Facebook Live and madisontalks.com.